All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman. And today we are wrapping up our roster review series by looking back at the 2018 season and breaking down the Falcons' special teams.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. We are finally done with our roster review series as of today, finishing things up with our special teams unit, our special teams review from 2018, looking back at the 2018 season, looking ahead a little bit to the 2019 season. And so now that we've been able, you know, the thing I will say and the reason why we did this roster review series and the reason why we did it so late is because I procrastinated on it a little bit. But, you know, now that we've finally got it done, we can really turn our attention to what is ahead in 2019 with our sort of final look back at 2018. And, of course, we'll discuss 2019 on today's episode as well as we go through the kickers, the punters, the return specialists, and, of course, the coverage units that make up the Falcons special teams. Of course, let's talk about the kicker position. I'm not going to necessarily go too much into the disrespect that the Falcons gave towards our beloved Matt Bryant. I will touch upon it a little bit, but, you know, I could spend another 30 minutes ranting about that. I still don't like the move, but it is what it is at this point. And looking back at Matt Bryant's season, as I said when we talked about him getting cut, I think, you know, every scrap of evidence you could find would suggest that if he wasn't the best kicker in the league in 2018, then he was definitely in the top 3 to 5 guys. So definitely a guy that was kicking at a high level. We only saw Giorgio Tavecchio for 3 games, but he kicked well in those games, made all 5 of his kicks, dating back to his time in Oakland. You know, he was struggled in Oakland when he was kicking home games in Oakland, but Oakland is notoriously not a kicker-friendly stadium. When he was on the road, I think he was perfect on the road in 2017. So basically, you know, kicking in the friendly confines of Mercedes-Benz Stadium, we saw that sort of continue. You know, the one thing I will say about the whole Matt Bryant situation, the Tavecchio situation, I had a lot of people sort of trying to fan-splain to me sort of why the Falcons did what they did, as if, like, I don't understand why the Falcons did what they did. The reason I was complaining about it is because I don't agree with the Falcons doing what they did. But, like, one of the odd things for me, at least, sort of with that whole situation was sort of how it was kind of likened to a situation, you know, not necessarily explicitly, but it was kind of implied that it was similar to a situation with the Green Bay Packers found themselves in over a decade ago when they were sort of turning the page from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, and Brett Favre was the old wolf and Aaron Rodgers was the young pup. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, and obviously hindsight certainly strongly suggests that, you know, doing what they did at the time was the right call. But, you know, again, without going into the nuances of the differences between the quarterback position and the kicker position and whatnot, I feel like a lot of people sort of look at this situation as the Falcons needing to turn the page from Matt Bryant, who the old wolf in this scenario, to Giorgio Tavecchio, the young pup and whatnot. And sort of the way that that explanation kind of bothers me is just this idea that, like, if the Falcons lose Giorgio Tavecchio, like, they would have had to make a choice at some point in the next 6 months to keep Matt Bryant or keep Giorgio Tavecchio, and you didn't want to let go of Giorgio Tavecchio. And that's the part that sort of was weird to me. Like, obviously, you know, in the situation with the Packers, with Aaron Rodgers, you know, with the quarterback position again, you know, potentially letting go a franchise quarterback is going to have, you know, significant effects on your team's future, and not to sort of diminish the kicker position, because I do think it's more important than a lot of people out there seem to indicate it is. But, you know, I feel like it's not like a franchise altering sort of situation if the Falcons can't find another journeyman kicker that basically bounced around the league 7 years before he ever stuck with the Raiders last season. So I don't feel like Giorgio Tavecchio was this Aaron Rodgers type of young phenom that the Falcons couldn't possibly risk losing and couldn't possibly find a competent replacement for. To me, if we're continuing this analogy, to me, Giorgio Tavecchio was more of a Matt Flynn type. And for those of you that don't recall who Matt Flynn was, he was the backup to Aaron Rodgers for several years in Green Bay. And in a number of notable sort of like week 17 games where the Packers had clinched the playoff spot, they threw Matt Flynn in there and he would sort of light up teams like the Lions and whatnot in some shootouts with Matt Stafford. And that led people to sort of think, oh, Matt Flynn's going to be, he's a starter. He's got a future. He's got a bright future. And I think the Seahawks acquired him back in 2012, the same year they drafted Russell Wilson. Of course, Russell Wilson wound up winning that job. Then a couple of years later, Matt Flynn wound up in Oakland. The same year, I think they drafted Derek Carr, and Derek Carr wound up winning that job. And shortly thereafter, I think Matt Flynn was out of the league. And it's not meant to suggest that, Giorgio Tavecchio is, bad or anything and is going to be out of the league, very soon. But it is one of those things where, I feel like acting like Giorgio Tavecchio is this guy that you know the team or you're hopeful. I mean, again, you can be hopeful, I guess, but like this idea that, this is a move that is going to have deep, deep, long-term ramifications, similar to sort of giving up on an Aaron Rodgers type of player. I just feel like that's kind of people stretching a little bit in my eyes. So that's the one thing I wanted to say about that situation. But on the note of Giorgio Tavecchio, I feel like he's probably going to have some success in Atlanta. To me, the question is how much success. As we've discussed before, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is a kicker-friendly environment. So, the bar is pretty reasonably low. The big question is going to be, can he make those consistent clutch kicks? We saw on the one time he got the opportunity to do so this year, in 2018, he did have another opportunity in 2017 in Oakland as well, and was successful in that kick. Just the question is, are you going to have the reliability that you've seen from Matt Bryan over the last decade there? And sort of, how that affects, a season that can win and lose you a couple of games each year. But I think with Tavecchio, I feel like we'll have to see sort of what he does. It's a situation where maybe, he could be wind up on the Mount Rushmore, on the pantheon of great Falcons kickers alongside guys like Bryan and Morton Anderson and Norm Johnson, among others, and winds up playing 10 years here in Atlanta as the team's kicker, or, he could be gone in 10 months. So we'll have to sort of see how that goes. And, I'm rooting for the guy. I will say that, as I said before, I'm not going to call him Italian Ice until he proves that he can make some of those clutch kicks. Like, basically, I need to see him kick two clutch kicks, make two of them, before I start calling him Italian Ice. And until then, I'm only going to refer to him as Il Mancino. For those of you that don't speak Italiano, that means the lefty. So, he's got to earn the nickname Italian Ice. You can't just get, cute nicknames just right off the bat just because they sound cool and whatnot. You got to earn them in my book. But, I'll die on that hill all day, I guess. So we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about Matt Bosher and the punting situation. But before we do, I want to let you guys know that host Matt Williamson just wrapped up another great week on the Locked On NFL podcast, where he was joined by some great guests to talk draft, talk Joe Flacco trade, and much, much more. Things are certainly still afoot in the NFL offseason, and you don't want to miss the experts that will talk to Matt next week by subscribing to the Locked On NFL podcast, wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your team every day. So let's talk Matt Bosher. There was a vocal minority of people out there that, were talking about sort of Matt Bosher having a down season and sort of being on the roster bubble. And again, in a world, in a post the Falcons cut Matt Bryant world, pretty much everybody is technically on the roster bubble, if you ask me. But so we'll see about that. But, I think Bosher's, the decline of Matt Bosher, I think, was sort of greatly exaggerated. There was certainly a point in the middle of the season where some of his statistics weren't necessarily that impressive. But, there's more to punting than just simply looking at how many yards your average per punt. But, you know, even though he was at the bottom of the league, say, about halfway through the season, he wound up with a strong second half and finished 10th in total punt average and 15th in net punt average. So any sort of talk of him having this down season, I think, is, you know, was a little bit premature. You know, I think he also showed some things off, you know, doing a little bit better job in some of the sort of directional punting categories than he had the previous year. His kickoff, you know, I don't think he had as many touchbacks, but I think the Falcons had done a pretty good job in terms of field position on kickoffs, because I think, from at least for my bet, is I think the Falcons were purposefully kicking them short of the end zone, because, you know, I haven't seen the data to truly confirm this or completely back this up, but I imagine the Falcons figured out that just conceding 25 yards by kicking touchbacks is not necessarily advantageous, and trying to put the ball in play so that a guy would return it and potentially, you know, limit them to starting drives out at the 18 or the 20 or whatever made a lot more sense. And so I think that's, to me, that explains why Matt Bosher wasn't necessarily booming as many touchbacks in 2018 as we had grown accustomed to seeing him do in previous years. To me, the question is going to be sort of, what is the future of Matt Bosher? He's entering a contract year in 2019. You know, he's still got several years left. He's been in the league for 8 years, but, you know, similar to as we saw with Matt Bryant and other kickers and punters around the league, you know, as a specialist, you can generally be expected to play well into your late 30s and even into your 40s. So, you know, Matt Bosher presumably could play another 10 years in the league. So I'll be curious to see if the Falcons do anything to extend his contract this offseason. We already saw them extend Josh Harris's contract. You know, again, the Falcons could go in the completely opposite direction and decide to move on from Matt Bosher, but it would be just weird for the Falcons to basically have decided that of the three core special teams guys, that the only one that they wanted back was the long snapper. No offense to Josh Harris, who's been steady and solid since his rookie season. But, you know, it's kind of weird to me that that would be the conclusion that they would have reached at this point in time. You know, I think we'll have to see what Bosher does and what the Falcons decide to do with that. Moving ahead, you know, I don't really have any other thoughts on the long snappers. Josh Harris is coming back. John Kondo is a free agent and won't be resigned, who filled in for Harris in with the final two games. And then I still can't remember who the guy was on the roster for week one. I want to say it was Jeff Overball, but I don't remember. But I'm too lazy to look it up. It's not that important to me. So, you know, let's move on to the return specialist and talk about, you know, not a whole lot to say about Marvin Hall. I think he did a solid job, a better job than some of our recent kickoff returners in recent years. Justin Hardy as a punt returner was not very good. You know, I've previously opined on previous episodes that the reason why I thought the Falcons stuck with Justin Hardy as the punt returner was due to the fact that they didn't really have anything else for him to do on game day other than get occasional snaps on offense to, you know, half the time block and for the other half of the time just to basically give guys like Sanu and Ridley a breather. And I think because of, you know, years of loyal service or whatever you want to call it, they, you know, gave him this consolation prize of giving him an opportunity to return punts. You know, basically the addition of Calvin Ridley, you know, Calvin really usurped his job as Sanu's primary backup at the wide receiver position. And then with the additions of guys like Russell Gage and Justin Bethel to sort of, you know, take over the punt gunner spot, which was a job that technically Hardy, the Falcons took him off of midway through the 2017 season, I think due to injury. But once they added those two guys, like there was no, he wasn't really a valuable part of their coverage units anymore. And so basically to justify keeping him active every Sunday, and whether, you know, the team would term it that way, I think they basically were like, you know, return punts and see what you can do with that. And he didn't do much with it. So to me, the big question is going to be what do the Falcons do at this position? Do they go at it and, you know, do what they should have done in 2018 and have Marvin Hall be both the kick and punt returner, which I think is who's the most qualified player for it? Do they add another player that can do that based off of some of the comments that Dan Quinn has made postseason, based off of my expectation that Hardy will walk in free agency and the Falcons will add somebody to their wide receiver depth to sort of fill that roster spot, I fully expect the Falcons to do what they tried to do in 2016 and 2017, which is sign someone specifically or draft someone specifically to be a return specialist. Hopefully, unlike the case was with Devin Fuller, that guy will also have the upside to, you know, actually carve out a significant role on offense and or defense based off of the position. But I expect that to be a wide receiver, so more likely offense. You know, and a guy like Andre Roberts, who had the ability to do more on offense than the Falcons, but they barely played him on offense that year in 2017. So we'll have to see. You know, for me at least, if, you know, I don't necessarily believe in investing in return specialists, largely due to the fact that I think it's a diminishing or a shrinking a niche in the NFL. And so therefore, I've seen a lot of teams basically be able to save roster spots by letting some, you know, you have guys like Antonio Brown and Julian Edelman and Patrick Peterson returning punts and whatnot. And obviously Marvin Hall has proven that he can return kicks and other guys. So, you know, this was an argument I was making, you know, last year or 2 years ago, basically saying like, this is why they should have had Taylor Gabriel, you know, sort of doing that in order to save them a roster spot rather than, you know, quote unquote, wasting one for a purely return specialist that doesn't do much of anything else on offense or defense. But, you know, the Falcons tried that in 2018 and it didn't necessarily work by just having a bunch of guys compete for that job. But, you know, I would at least argue the reason why it didn't work was because the Falcons, A, you know, didn't really pick the right guys. Like the guys that, you know, you could argue that Calvin Ridley should have been returning kicks and Marvin Hall should have been returning punts this year, but they didn't choose those guys, as well as we didn't really get an opportunity to see Reggie Davis, who arguably was the most skilled return specialist on the roster in going into training camp. Really didn't get any opportunities to do that during the preseason and whatnot, and didn't get a fair shake to win that job as well. So I feel like the Falcons had the right strategy of having, you know, five or six guys in camp competing for the job, but then just didn't implement that strategy, I guess, properly. So, but, you know, I because of that reason, I expect the Falcons to basically go in the opposite direction, go back to what they tried to do in 2016 to, you know, no avail, and wind up adding a return specialist in the draft. And you know, maybe a third time's a charm. It didn't necessarily work out with Fuller or Roberts, but maybe it happens, you know, a third time. So we'll see how that goes. But we'll come back and wrap things up with the discussion of the coverage units. But I do want to let you guys know that there are people out there in this world that have smart devices in their homes, and they can tell it to play their favorite Locked On podcast. But not everybody has a smart device in their home, but you do have a smart device in your hand or maybe in your pocket right now, and you can tell it to play your favorite Locked On podcast whenever you're on the go. Just tell it to play Locked On Falcons, and the most illustrious Falcons podcast that there is in this planet is always at your beck and call, your team every day. So let's talk about the Falcons coverage units. They were much, much better in 2018 than we've seen in recent years. I think a lot of that improvement is owing to the fact that the Falcons actually did do some investment. You know, I do believe in the philosophy of reaping what you sow. The one exception to that is I don't think you should sow too many seats in the return specialist spot personally. But, you know, elsewhere on the roster, I'm all for, you know, sort of sowing those seeds and whatnot. But, you know, we saw additions like Gage and Justin Bethel and Ola Kuhn and Jordan Richards and Bruce Carter and Keith Tandy. And I think all those guys had a hand in upgrading the unit, particularly Bethel. You know, the Falcons drafted Gage, and you guys may not recall Mike Mayock, formerly of NFL Network, currently of the Oakland Raiders. Was very high on Gage's potential on special teams. I wasn't necessarily blown away by Gage. I think he was okay, but, you know, he didn't necessarily blow me away with his ability and coverage, but maybe that we'll see that improve. You know, one of the things in doing some research to talk about this episode, I started going back and looking at sort of the history of the team's drafting. And, you know, this has been a pro Keith Armstrong podcast for many, many years. And I felt like a lot of it was you know, a lot of the criticisms of him were not necessarily fair, and I felt like he was always sort of tasked with trying to make lemonade out of lemons. And, you know, throw some oranges in there or something. I don't know, but to continue the metaphor. But, you know, one of the things I was looking at is sort of like when you look at teams, when you're drafting players, typically when you have guys at, you know, the offensive skill positions like running back, wide receiver, tight end, as well as at the defensive ones like linebacker, cornerback, and safety, typically when you draft guys at those positions and they're not first-round picks or they don't wind up winning starting jobs, the expectation is those guys are going to contribute on special teams during their rookie years, and then, you know, in years two and three and beyond, once they start to develop a little bit more, they can, you know, carve out bigger roles on offense and or defense. And looking back at the Falcons drafts under Dan Quinn, you just haven't had a lot of their rookies, a lot of their draft picks really impact on special teams. And I think that's been a contributing factor to why the Falcons special teams over the years hasn't been as great as, you know, I think people would want it to be, and why the Falcons have had to rely on additions like Justin Bethel and Jordan Richards and et cetera to sort of, you know, solve the problems. You've seen them have to rely on undrafted free agents like Marvin Hall and Sherrod Neesman to have significant roles there as well. And, you know, to illustrate this point, you look at the 2015 draft where there were four players that you presumed could have played roles on special teams, including Jalen Collins, Tevin Coleman, Justin Hardy, and Akeem King. And Hardy was really the only guy that really carved out a regular effective role on special teams. Collins played there some as a rookie, but it wasn't necessarily special, and King, you know, barely was on the team beyond that season. In 2016, you had guys like Deion Jones, Austin Hooper, Devondre Campbell, and Devin Fuller. Obviously, Fuller was drafted to be this return specialist. That didn't work out due to injury. Jones and Campbell wound up starting games right away, so they weren't really asked. So it was basically Hooper, who did a decent job his rookie season as well on special teams. Then in 2017, the Falcons drafted guys like Duke Riley and DeMonte Casey and Brian Hill and Eric Saubert. And again, only really one out of those four guys, Saubert, was a regular contributor on special teams. As I've mentioned before, Duke Riley played special teams, continues to play special teams. I don't think really adds a whole lot there. And Casey and Hill also haven't been regular contributors on special teams either. And then this past year in 2018, you had another four guys that the Falcons drafted in Isaiah Oliver, Ito Smith, Russell Gage, and Foye Olukun. And finally, two of those guys, more than a quarter of those guys, actually carved out significant roles on special teams. Oliver also, you know, was a kickoff cover guy, but I wouldn't necessarily was a key component to that, given where he plays on the wing. Is basically he's meant to basically only make the sort of touchdown saving tackles. I didn't necessarily cover it, and we know Ito Smith didn't necessarily have a significant role on special teams, even though he was in the mix to potentially return kicks this year. And so when you do the math, you know, 5 out of 16 possible picks that the Falcons have had over the last 4 years that could have been major contributors on special teams, only 5 out of those 6 is, you know, less than a third. And so I think that's one of the reasons why the special teams, you know, that's a contributing factor. I won't sit here and say that is the overarching, you know, sole reason, but that is a contributing factor, is that the Falcons aren't necessarily maximizing their draft potential to bolster special teams. And I, you know, it's not to sit here and be like, you know, they're maliciously, or, you know, they're incompetent or anything. A lot of that, you know, some of that is injuries. Some of that is guys not making the team. Some of that, again, is guys winning starting spots and not necessarily the Falcons. You know, Deion Jones was a great special teamer at LSU, and probably could have had a huge impact on the special teams his rookie season had he been asked to play there. But, you know, unfortunately, the Falcons had only had Paul Warlow standing in his way. Maybe in a world where they had retained Nate Stupar, maybe Nate Stupar would have manned the middle and Deion Jones would have been able to play special teams. But, you know, speaking of Stupar, you know, he's one of several players that the Falcons have sort of lost over the years that were regular contributors and regular key pieces on those special teams units. And so, you know, I think the interesting thing for me is going to be with the hiring of Ben Katwika. I still don't know how to say his name, and probably every time I say it, I'm going to use a different pronunciation. You know, by the time we get to Argos, I'll probably get it right. But what the interesting thing with Katwika is going to be, you know, whether or not the Falcons' hit rate in the draft is going to improve under his guidance. Is that due to just them being better able to target some of these guys that, you know, have skills that can translate to special teams? Is it because Kotoka is going to coach those guys up a little bit better than, you know, I know many people out there would argue Keith Armstrong could. Will he get more out of Duke Riley and whatnot? Will he get more out of Russell Gage and whatnot than, you know, we saw this past year, and as well as others? So that's going to be the interesting question for me, you know. Ever since I've been reviewing games and watching the Falcons special teams, Keith Armstrong has been the the special teams coordinator. So I'll be interesting to see sort of what changes occur under Kotwika this upcoming season and see if it leads to better results. You know, again, it's a pro Keith Armstrong podcast, and I hope it's going to be a pro Ben Kotwika podcast as well. So I'm curious to see how that goes. As we always say, or as I always say, hashtag special teams matter. So we'll see how it goes in 2019. And that sort of is our, I won't say final word, but, you know, let's say final word on the 2018 season. And, I don't know what we're going to do next week. I guess we'll do a mailbag on Monday, and that will at least give you something to look forward to. And then I'll figure out what we're going to do next week. I know at some point I want to talk combine, but I think we're, 2 weeks away from the combine, so that doesn't necessarily have to happen next week. And there's maybe some other guests that I can bring on so that we can talk about maybe various other subjects. And, of course, you guys can suggest some concepts and some content that you want to see over the next couple of weeks. We're going to start gearing up to free agency as well as the draft with the combine coming up. We're going to be mostly focused on free agency for the next several weeks, but because of the combine, we will talk some draft stuff, and then we'll save the bulk of our draft content till probably late March, early April, and then basically run through the month of April with draft stuff. So that's kind of the schedule, but, you know, there's always room for you guys to throw some things at me and sort of suggest things. And of course, you can do so. You can hit me up on Twitter, send those ideas over to Locked On Falcons on Twitter. Locked On Falcons is the name of the Facebook page as well. You can send them then there. The email address, if you don't like social media, is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at falcfans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. I should also remind you guys that you should be checking falcfans.com pretty regularly, because there's going to be more content in the coming days and weeks up there. Currently, there is a first round mock draft, where I go through all 32 first-round picks and explain some of the picks. You can go see who I had the Falcons selecting. We're going to have some combine-related content coming up. I'm hoping to drop a 7-round mock draft for the Falcons at some point next week. So you can look forward to that, as well as much, much more content that I have planned for the rest of this offseason. So, we're getting things into gear, so look forward to that. And I guess we'll, you know, those other addresses, Locked On Falcons and whatnot, is where you can send in your mailbag questions to be answered on Monday's episode. So until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.